I got a new cell phone recently, and the phone and I have not entirely settled who is running the show. I am willing to admit it. In our competition for authority, I do not always win. Sometimes the phone wins. And one of the ways that it likes to highlight a victory is that occasionally when I get in the car, my phone starts to play music over the car speakers without my setting it up to do that. This does not always happen, and I cannot predict when it will happen. Often, once my phone is on a roll, it plays the same song over and over and over again each time I get in the car and start it. But sometimes the phone doesn't play anything at all, as if it's taunting me. And sometimes it plays a different song each time I start the car. This happened again a few days ago. I got in the car and I started it up, and Nina Simone's song, The Family, came on over my speakers. I don't know if you know that song. It is off of her 1995 album, Baltimore. And the song is about a family that gets beaten down and pulled apart by a tidal wave of trials that come their way. Over and over again, she sings a refrain with two lines. Looks like even God can't save the family. Looks like only God can save the family. I haven't heard that song in a while, and it immediately got me thinking about sanctuary. We Unitarian Universalists are, of course, mixed on the nature of God, whether God exists, and how God operates, if God does exist. But one thing we tend to come together on is that we, us mortals, have an inevitable and inextricable role in the fabric of things. Because if God is working out there, it is partly, surely, through us. And clearly, the way things are going, God needs us to do our part. And if God is not out there, or just isn't set up to intervene in things, then our own capacities for goodness and justice and compassion and love are all the more important, because we are all there is to make those real in the world. In the context of Nina Simone's song, that means when someone is struggling in the riptide of life, it is up to us to help, to save one another, to help save each other. And while that sits fairly comfortably in Unitarian Universalist theology, that take does not belong only to us. Dr. King offered the same conclusion when he said, "Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't need to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love." Grace is our theme this month, and it aligns so powerfully with the faith of Dr. King, whose birthday we celebrate tomorrow. He was a great man and a flawed man, as all men, all of us human beings, are. And nonetheless, his greatness gave him, I think, the capacity to be an embodiment of grace for this country. We needed him, and we arguably did not deserve him, and we certainly didn't always honor him in life. But his death, his assassination, woke many people up from their distraction or their dissatisfaction or their complacency, and tragically, we have done so much better honoring him after we lost him than we did before. But that is also why he was an experience of grace. Because as a whole nation, we did not earn him, and that is exactly what the nature of grace is. It is a gift. It comes to us unbidden, and unearned. We cannot ever compel grace or entice it or strategize for it. It comes when it comes. And if we're lucky, it comes when we really need it. And I think that is when we see it as such a sacred gift, when we are desperate or drowning or failing or falling, and this gift comes, not just luck. It feels like more than luck, it's a blessing. It feels like a bridge. As the folk singer Peter Mayer puts it, a bridge that is built to us from the other side. Reverend Carlton Pearson, a formerly Pentecostal bishop who is now serving at our Unitarian Universalist congregation in Tulsa, Oklahoma, says this about grace. The idea of grace tends to trigger religious thoughts of a God who measures grace through sympathy and kindness. In a non-religious sense, grace is one reflecting the same traits of sympathy and kindness as entirely human, evolving and including benevolence and simple elegance and refinement of movement or mind. Grace and graciousness is a culture and a characteristic. A culture and a characteristic, he says, that can be, should be, part and parcel of spiritual community. Now, part of what Carlton Pearson is talking about here is beloved community, and that's a term we hear and use often, but it is not just a really appealing synonym for a congregation. Beloved community is a very specific term. It is charged with theological and cultural particularities and commitments. The phrase was first used by Josiah Royce in the very beginning of the 20th century to counter what he saw as the extreme individualism of 19th century leading theologians and thinkers, including our own Ralph Waldo Emerson, where they focused on the individual's capacity to be more. Josiah Royce believed that our lives are meaningless unless we are bonded in community with an alignment of feeling and thought and will. For Josiah Royce, beloved community was an aspirational ideal where the members were, quote, fully dedicated to ideals of loyalty and deep truth and reality, unquote. In beloved community, individuals were still individuals with full selfhood, but also individuals were part of a greater whole, a cohesive, larger self that existed in a greater sense over time. Now, theologians have taken his language and ideas and built on them ever since, including, famously, Dr. King. For Dr. King, beloved community was not aspirational. It was actual. It was a possible aim, which people could achieve if we deeply commit ourselves to the principles and practice of nonviolence. This could even take on an international dimension, with peaceful resolution of all conflicts if we were determined enough. He said, quote, the end is reconciliation, the end is redemption, the end is the creation of beloved community. It is this type of spirit and this type of love that can transform opponents into friends. It is this type of understanding, goodwill, that will transform the deep gloom of the old age into the exuberant gladness of the new age. It is this love which will bring about miracles in the hearts of men. So, when we refer to beloved community, it's got capital letters implied. There is a whole lot folded up in that. Deep loyalty and faithfulness, a larger life where we come together strongly, a commitment to nonviolence and healing and reconciliation and ultimately redemption, all of this that is not unlike what it might look like to save a family, to save a whole family, the human family. Living into those principles and practices can take many forms. And one of the forms it has taken, I think, is in the courageous and broad-reaching and deep-hearted enacting of sanctuary in this church. This church took a family in sanctuary a couple of months ago, a mother and three children, while the father was being held on a criminal charge. And the family was absolutely sure that he wasn't guilty, and the father believed an investigation would exonerate him. The family was here because the parents had applied for asylum. All three children were U.S. citizens born here. But when things got complicated and frightening, they lost their hope that the systems in place would keep them safe, and they turned to us because they were fearful that ICE might deport either or both of the parents, splitting the family and leaving the children unprotected and possibly even separated from each other. They reached out to us, and we took them in. Millie and her children, Vicky, Danny, and Daisy. We did this to help this family, and we did this to help all families and individuals under threat from current immigration practices, and we did this as a form of resistance, and we did it as a form of advocacy. We did this to remember and remind ourselves that we are not helpless. And we did this because our faith is powerful when we lean into it. We did this to make things better and to help ourselves feel better and to help others, most of all. And what we didn't expect at all, was that we would receive so much. So much that we couldn't compel or entice or strategize for. So much grace. I don't need to tell you what I think this experience was like, because you yourselves have spoken about this beloved community's experience of providing sanctuary in ways that go right back to Carlton Pearson's words, reflecting the same traits of sympathy and kindness as entirely human, evolving and including benevolence and simple elegance and refinement of movement or mind. So I need to read to you now some of what you have shared with me about what this experience was like. You said, "I have never been so proud of my community as I watched people come forward to embrace this family. Whenever a request was made, people immediately filled it. Sitting in the meeting house shortly after the family arrived, I mentioned to Susie Dora, a recently retired middle school teacher at Wheeler, that there was an 11-year-old boy needing academic support in math. Within days, she was working with him twice a week for the entire time the family was with us. Jim Estee and Janet Braylove stepped forward to offer academic support to both Danny and Vicky. Jim gave Danny piano lessons and was working on developing lessons in the area of social studies. Janet worked with Vicky using preschool Montessori Big Works. Maya Brungberg-Kraus, a reading specialist from Temple Emmanuel, and Kay Schwertner, a teacher on maternity leave, the daughter of Kirstie Yellow, volunteered to work with Danny in the area of language arts. Maya worked with Danny on assessing his reading level and comprehension of text, and Kai was just about to start working with him on fluency and comprehension when the family made the decision to leave. I met and had some powerful conversations with members of the congregation, some of whom I had never talked to before, as well as individuals from different Jewish synagogues and the Providence Zen Center and the Sisters of Mercy and others. The sense of community I felt was amazing. The staff of this church was exceptional throughout the entire stay of this family. They rallied around the family, and two members of the staff came up to me at different times to tell me how proud and amazed they were that this church had stepped up so powerfully to offer sanctuary to this family. The staff really opened their arms to this family, some of them spending time with both the children and Millie outside of their normal work hours. I learned how to play cribbage during one of my hosting shifts. I learned that the water fountains are very loud in the middle of the night when you are trying to sleep. I remember sitting with Ann Boyd during a shift just listening to Danny play the piano. I remember watching Vicky get so excited when she came into the office to see the dogs. One day she came downstairs hoping to see Hazelnut, only to find out Hazelnut wasn't in that day, and she started crying. But then the tears turned to smiles and giggles when she realized that Quinn was there. I remain awed and inspired by Daisy, the 18-year-old in the family. She was able to figure out a way to get her family to a safe place, meet with lawyers on her father's behalf, be the interpreter for her family, communicate with people about her brother's education, and so many other things, all while working a part-time job to help support her family financially. I will never forget the look on Millie's face when she realized we were offering her family sanctuary. Cheryl Bartholomew. Ann Boyd wrote, "The sanctuary host role was for me a rich and multi-tiered experience each and every shift. Interaction with my co-host over the course of a five-hour shift gave me opportunities to either meet someone completely new, often outside of our church family, or to deepen a relationship with someone I may have known only casually within the church. Vicky's energy and personality provided endless entertainment. Danny often played his most recent self-taught version of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. And Daisy demonstrated maturity and graciousness well beyond her 18 years. And Millie, always smiling and with expressions of gratitude, was quick to share samples of her culinary creations from the kitchen. Sensing that Danny, who's age 11, might welcome some time spent with boys of similar age and energy, I introduced him to my two grandsons who were visiting from Vermont, and their time together spent playing Twister and board games, punctuated with lots of laughter, proved to be a highlight for all three boys. Upon hearing Danny would be leaving the U.S. and relocating to Mexico, both grandsons wrote letters to Danny wishing him a safe journey." I was doing the night hours, so I didn't have much contact with the family. Volunteering did make it all real to me to put a face on the news that I read about deportations. Knowing that the family was staying in our church and were a target of law enforcement twisted to political ends made me hurt for our country and all people caught in this corrupt system. I could only do nights, and I happened to pick the last night the family stayed with us. At 5 a.m., they were ready to leave for the airport, with Kathy and Steve Alquist driving. I hugged Millie and Daisy and had no words, not only because I don't know Spanish. I think of three American children who will grow up in Mexico because the only other choice was separation from their parents. I hope we will soon have a national leadership that looks at the reasons people take desperate chances to get here and live in such precarious circumstances. Nancy Green. My main life and worldview is Taoism, and the basic idea is that Tao is a type of life force from which we all come. The basic goal of Taoist practice is to stay connected as strongly as possible to this undefinable life force. Among the ways of reaching this goal are good health and meditative exercise and meaningful activity, and for me, doing sanctuary host was, and hopefully will be again, such meaningful activity. It is essentially a cycling back and forth of energy between giver and recipient. My own experience as host gave me a feeling of being more healthful, and dare I say, rejuvenated. I'm pretty in tune with my physical self, and I feel safe to say that while being a host, I also had a real feeling of becoming just a little bit younger. I attribute this feeling to the fact of doing something deeply meaningful on behalf of our guest family and sharing my personal energy towards their predicament. Would I recommend sanctuary hosting to another person? For sure. For me, it's not even a political issue. It's about doing for people when they have trouble and seeking something better from life. I am very grateful and happy for the chance to have put my energy out like this. If I do this often enough, maybe rejuvenation feelings will make me 20 years old again? Claude Leboeuf. I was hosting on Sunday evening and needed to make sure the church was secured at 9:30. The family had visitors earlier, but I had not seen the guests leave the building, so I went upstairs to their apartment and tentatively knocked on their door, and I can only say that what I experienced when the door opened transformed me. It turned out the guests had left, so I felt a little sheepish about disturbing the family. Danny, the 11-year-old, opened the door and greeted me with a big smile. I knew Danny and had played dominoes with him. He had been playing with his little sister, Vicky, and she was giggling. I had played blocks with Vicky. Daisy was sitting on the bed, and Mama was standing near her. I knew each of them, but had never seen them actually all together. Daisy said, of course, in her perfect English, "Thanks so much for checking on us." They were happy. They were safe. When I closed the door behind me, I broke down, so emotionally moved to see them all together in one room. The image of the four of them forever is with me, like I was waking from a dream to find it actually happening. My experience suddenly was so heartfelt and personal for a mother and her children, for children and their mother, and for their missing father. For the space where they were in hiding, I suddenly felt so vulnerable. Maybe I suddenly was aware of the courage this participation was taking, and maybe now wondering if I was up to it. I returned downstairs still shaken, and it took me a day or so to feel a sense of my own resilience and the privilege of being connected to the larger, heartfelt courage of this church and the sanctuary experience. Thank you, Kathy and Judy, for your courage. I am a better human for it. Leslie Long. I found working on the sanctuary team a really profound way to connect with other members of our community and in the spirit of doing service and with shared commitments to justice. While the individual moments I spent as a sanctuary volunteer were mundane and uneventful, aside from some delightful conversations with other volunteers, the gravity of taking on the physical safety of other human beings, the gravity of taking on the physical safety of other human beings was always present. The implications of what that means for how we care for each other and who we consider part of our world, regardless of what relationship we do or don't have with the individuals, was a special opportunity to ground my abstract ideals in loving action. I am very grateful to the UU community for giving me an opportunity to serve in this way. Love, Ava Agudelo. And as Kristen Ivy Moses celebrated, what we all who tasted them agree, Millie's cacti tostadas were always delicious. In fact, there was a lot of grace wrapped up with every tortilla that she brought around the church, piles of food that she shared with sanctuary hosts, with us who were on the staff, with anyone who was ever in the church when her cooking was ready. Millie is a gifted cook, and she brought her food around to us all, and in the sharing of food, community, even communion with each other and with the sacred was felt by many. Judy Ortman spoke with me about the extraordinary range and depth of experience and gifts she received through her work for Sanctuary here, and her words make so much sense, and this is exactly what she said. I just hope that the family received anything close to how much we received in hosting them. our ties to the greater Providence community, Brown students, congregations of all faith traditions, and neighbors and friends, along with the strong, caring network within this church, all of it was drawn on and lifted up and strengthened and energized and deepened by the responsibility of love and what that can mean here and now. I would like to invite all those who participated, who supported or hosted or supplied or built or advocated or designed or donated or planned, to stand now, please, or raise your hand so we can recognize everyone who helped make our vision a reality and to represent the power of humanity against the inhumanity of power. All of you, members and friends and neighbors and colleagues in faith and collaborators in compassion, have been touched, I know, by what you have witnessed and what you have done. The writer James Thurber was not thinking of beloved community when he wrote this. In fact, he offered it as a wry truth, but it is also a spiritual truth and part of the foundation of beloved community. Love is what you have been through with somebody. It is not for me to say what Dr. King would stand for if he were alive today. I can only say that from everything I have studied of his life and his work and his theology, the sanctuary movement and sanctuary at this church is absolutely representative of all that he believed and taught. It feels so good on Martin Luther King Sunday to not just remind ourselves of the man and what he preached, but to celebrate our living into what he preached. And not only to celebrate that accomplishment, but also to lift up the deep gifts of grace that we received, unexpected and precious, because we leaned into our faith. We could not offer ourselves or Dr. King a better remembrance. May our work and our faith continue to gain strength and depth, and may we remain committed not only to the work and our faith, but also to gratitude for the grace that comes when we lean into love.